You can find out more about us online at kgnu.org. And right now, you can check out our Facebook page, the KGNU Community Radio Facebook page, because we are going live. We're Facebook Live video streaming our next segment, which is a really exciting segment. Just in time for Earth Day. It's part of our year-long partnership with EcoCycle. It's been funded through a grant by Boulder County to bring you weekly tips on recycling and composting, and also quarterly call-in shows, as well as some monthly radio stories. So today is the first in our quarterly series, looking at some of these broader issues around zero waste and recycling. And today we're calling this segment Designing for the Dump. That's actually the title of a piece that is being produced by a graduate student in CU Boulder's Environmental Studies program. Denise Fernandez also joining us in the studio. We'll talk about that, but it really gets to the bigger issue of built-in obsolescence when we have particularly electronics and technology that they're not designed to last, and so they end up in the waste stream. We're going to look at the broader issue of this, but just think for a moment how many broken items you actually have in your house right now. Is there a broken coffee maker loitering somewhere in your kitchen? Is your basement full of a box of broken digital clocks or other electronics? Well, today in studio, we have two technicians from the Boulder You Fix It Clinic. We also have Harlan Savage with EcoCycle. And as I mentioned, Denise Fernandez, a graduate student in the Environmental Studies program, joining us live. Our two technicians, Dan Mach and Wayne Seltzer with the Boulder You Fix It Clinic, will be doing some live on-air fixing during the show as well. They have some broken electronics with us in the studio. And with all of this going on, as I said, we're Facebook Live streaming it. We will also be inviting your calls. So if you have a broken electronic item, maybe you want to give us a call and see what we can do for you this morning. In the meantime, I'd like to welcome all of our guests to the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Maeve.
Well, as I said, the overall topic is really about electronics. And Harlan Savage, how big an issue is this? When we talk about electronics, we're talking about maybe broken lamps or coffee makers. But then we have other things that are kind of related, like the cell phones and some of the digital technology that we have. Does all of this end up in our landfills? I mean, how much is this contributing to waste?
Well, globally and locally, it's a significant portion of the waste stream. I believe that globally, it's the fastest growing segment of the waste stream, and it's become a hugely significant problem over the last couple of decades. And one thing that I think is really important here is to realize that a lot of these materials can actually be recycled, although that's not happening nearly as much as we would like it to be. And that's something that we'd like to do something about.
And not only recycled, but they could maybe be fixed and have their utility, expanded. So we'll talk about that.
And you raised another a good point there, Maeve, which is that it is dangerous to put these materials into landfills. And the state of Colorado recognized that recently, and in 2013 enacted a law that effectively bans e-waste or electronics from the landfill. And so that's been in place now for almost 5 years. And I don't know how many people realize that, but you should not throw your cell phone in the trash can.
The problem when we have regulations is if there's a lack of enforcement, you know, do they serve any purpose? So is there anybody actually monitoring this?
CDPHE, which is the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, is responsible for implementing this legislation. But I know that it's very challenging, particularly because of lack of funding. And the law itself, I believe, does not provide funding for that for local communities. And that's particularly problematic because it does cost money to provide this kind of responsible electronics recycling service.
In terms of responsibility, this is, I suppose, the broader topic that we're talking about. Who's responsible for creating all of this waste? It seems that currently it's the consumer responsible who has maybe a broken item, who then is responsible for finding a place for it. But as the topic of the show suggests, what is the role in the creators of this, whether it's the technology companies or the electronics companies, in not creating products that are designed to last. It seems we have this term built-in obsolescence, or as Denise is using for her series, designed for the dump. It's designing for the dump. They're not designed to last. They're designed to have a certain shelf life so then you can buy a new one.
That's exactly right. And that's something that I think EcoCycle and many others would like to change. In terms of how things stand right now, Denise may be able to add to this, but many states have some kind of law requiring a take back of electronics. And Dan Mache would be able to speak to this too. But that is not a national standard or law in any way. We don't have anything like that in Colorado. So this is a very live, very important discussion that we're having about who is responsible. And that really does get to the root of the problem.
I mean, I think this show is very pertinent because anybody can look around their house and see how much digital, technology, electronic waste they have. I have a drawer full of phone chargers. I don't have the phones for those chargers. The EU did enact a law to standardise phone chargers, at least. Is there anything happening here? So at least we won't have 10 phone chargers. Maybe we'll just have one phone charger for all the different phones that we might accumulate.
Well, that would be a very big difference between the EU and the United States. So as far as I know at this moment, there is nothing like that that's moving forward. As far as ideas that people have for how to address this problem, that's one of them that's out there.
Well, in terms of what we have going on now, I'm going to invite Dan Mache to talk about that in just a moment. But I do want to encourage people to check out the KGNU Facebook page. We're video live streaming this, and you might see a lovely lamp right in the middle of our desk here, because that is going to be repaired in just a moment. And this is one of the household electronics that can often end up in the waste stream that really can have its shelf life extended if we just learned how to fix things. And I don't want to shoot the conversation to another area, but we're not teaching these skills, it seems, in class anymore. Those shop classes seem to have, fallen by the wayside. Yet we have the Boulder You Fix It clinics that happen regularly in Boulder. And two of the folks here are part of that. It's Dan Mache and Wayne Seltzer. Well, Dan Mache, just before we get into this live on-air lamp fix that we've never done before on KGNU, what are your thoughts on this whole idea of designing for the dump, built-in obsolescence and corporate responsibility in that, in terms of why can't they create products built to last?
Well, they certainly can create products built to last. Manufacturers will tell you that they are responding to market demand. We always seek the cheapest item. If we're faced with six toasters and we perceive their value to us to be equal, we'll pick the cheapest one. So I think part of one aspect of the You Fix It clinic is to teach participants. Maybe there's a little bit of a difference that you don't perceive when you're standing at the big box store looking at all these different items that appear to be the same. You get to open it up and you get to take a look and see. This item has a something that is probably going to fail within a short amount of time. So once you know about that, then you can make that choice when you're standing at the store next time and maybe make a better choice.
I often think about that when we have, say, the big Black Friday sales and they're selling televisions for $100 or whatever. I mean, I know there's a whole other conversation about how things are priced, but these are cheap products, essentially, that aren't designed to last. But there are alternatives out there. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, at a big box store, maybe there's not the ideal alternative. I think an example I like is that Wayne taught me about is the difference in toasters that you could there's a part called a thermal fuse that is intended to protect you from burning your house down. Great idea. That part. It's a piece of metal that melts when the toaster gets too hot. So, if you if that happens, then if that happens to you, you likely consider that toaster to be toast, and you throw it away and you buy a new one. The fact is that manufacturer could have put in a thermal fuse that was resettable. So if a consumer is educated to the point to know, you know, I want something that has a fuse that I can reset, then you know the manufacturer gets that message eventually, and you get a better choice.
But in terms of knowing what to do with that fuse, or how to reset it, or how to change any of these parts, I suppose that's where you, Dan Mage, and Wayne Seltzer comes in. Now, Wayne, tell us about the idea behind the You Fix It clinics. This was your brainchild.
Well, this is a fun story. I was actually visiting San Francisco. I used to work for Oracle, and had dinner with some friends. One used to live in Boulder, Steve, and his friend Peter Mui, and Peter had started the Fix It Clinic. He runs Fix It Clinic out of Berkeley, and said, "You know, Wayne, we have a Fix It Clinic in Berkeley, but how come Boulder doesn't have one?" So I accepted the challenge. Soon after, there was an article in the New York Times about the repair cafe movement started in Amsterdam, where people were actually coming to coffee shops, that kind of coffee and the regular kind of coffee, and socially fixing things, tools, things, just as a fun time. So I said, "Well, this is cool. We should do this in Boulder." I posted to EcoCycle's Facebook page, and they got back to me in minutes saying, "Oh, where you've been? This project's been on our books for a couple of years. We just need someone to do it." I came over and met the EcoCycle staff, and we had the best time brainstorming about how this all could be. I think one of the most surprising things was getting back to the last topic, which is if this is about consumer education in the long term, would it be possible to have a product that had a repairability index on it? Mm-hmm. Like, we're interested in energy efficiency, we're interested in other attributes, it's gluten-free, whatever, but we don't know about repairability. So in fact, your thermal fuse example is pretty much invisible, and so we're not there. So EcoCycle folks said, you know, imagine the future we had a label, like we had the kind of plastic, the 5 or the 6 or the 2 and the triangle with the arrows. So we're not there yet. We might partner sometime as the global fix-it movement with organizations like Consumer Reports, add a column that says repairability. So all things equal, why wouldn't you buy the more repairable product? That looks like things like if you have a phone, they're all the same, and one you can replace the battery, which you know will eventually stop recharging, buy the one that's rechargeable. For our Facebook listeners, mm-hmm. Here's my smartwatch. Mm-hmm. I bought this. It's cool. Actually, it was a gift. But I know it has a rechargeable battery, and it's just basically a bunch of glue. I don't think I'll ever replace that battery. It's designed to be thrown away. But there are really earlier examples before we had computers and microprocessors. In fact, the advent of electric lighting, the light bulb manufacturers got together and said, you know, if we all make perfect light bulbs, no one will ever replace them. So they colluded, actually, and decided to put a little bit of oxygen inside the otherwise vacuum glass enclosure so the oxygen would eventually burn up the filament and they would be able to sell you replacement bulbs. That's sad, right?
Well, that also seems to get to the very heart of, you know, the capitalist economy. If you are building things to last, you're getting rid of an entire consumer base. And so it would seem that I can't imagine any change is going to happen with corporations alone deciding altruistically to change this, that it would have to happen through legislation.
So we're really in the early phases of this, right? I mean, way back in the beginning of EcoCycle, it was, old school buses and people running around town picking up newspapers because that seemed like a good idea to keep them out of the landfill. We're kind of in that experimental mode. We've done this for almost 5 years in August. We've done 33 clinics. That's almost 1,000 people have gone through this program. Some of them repeats. But we hope we're starting with this worldwide fix-it movement to educate some consumers who eventually put that feedback back into the distribution and manufacturing chain to say, we want products that are repairable. We want products mm-hmm. that are reliable. Mm-hmm. And we're going to vote with our consumption choices to get those products right. But we need to know. We need to be informed. So we've been having a great time informing people. It's a delight when people take apart a mysterious box that they've owned and realize that it's not that complicated and you can fix it.
Well, we're going to talk about that in a sec. We'll
sure.
do live on-air lamp fixing. That's Wayne Seltzer with the Boulder You Fix It Clinic. But Harlan Savage with EcoCycle, you wanted to jump in?
I just wanted to jump in there for a second. Thanks for that, Wayne. That was really informative. Just to bring it back to the concept of zero waste. And, you know, one thing that I think when recycling and all of that got started, that's what we were focusing on mostly was, okay, we have a waste problem. Let's recycle all this stuff. And what's happened over time is there's a realization that we cannot recycle ourselves out of our waste problems, which is not to diminish the critical importance of recycling, but we have to start working upstream. And that's what you're talking about, Maeve, with what are the choices that manufacturers are giving us in terms of the products we buy? How do we respond to those choices? And the You Fix It Clinic is a wonderful way of getting at the concept of, you know, reuse and repair, which is an important part of zero waste. I just want to say, as someone who's not really a fixer, and I think maybe other people are like this too, is that while I would love to repair things, it's mystifying to me. I don't know much about doing it. And I think that's one really important thing about the You Fix It clinics, is that they demystify the process. And then also, once you know, you get into what really makes this thing work, you think, wow, this isn't this complicated. I can do this. And you start getting a little more critical or about the products that you do buy. So.
That's Harlan Savage with EcoCycle, one of our guests here at KGNU on this Thursday morning in a special Earth Day show. I know we're looking ahead to this weekend when we will celebrate Earth Day. EcoCycle and KGNU are partnering in a year-long project on zero waste. And you can hear the tips on Friday mornings during the Morning Magazine. Quarterly, we're bringing you shows like this, and we will be inviting listeners to call in to really expand on some of these issues. And then monthly, we're going to have stories on recycling and zero waste. So tune in tomorrow morning on the Morning Magazine. We're going to hear about how recycling education with kids has been incredibly effective. And anyone with young children knows that they get this messaging in school and then they bring it home to the house. So my 8-year-old and 5-year-old, they know more about what goes into which bin than I do. And so that'll be tomorrow morning. But today we are talking about environmental impact of electronic waste. But what are some of the alternatives? Maybe we could fix some of those broken electronics instead of putting them into the dump. And as we have heard, there are some pretty significant consequences environmentally, but there are also some laws around this. Now, we are going to do a repair of this lamp in just a sec, but I do want to bring in Denise Fernandez, who is a graduate student in the Environmental Studies program at CU Boulder. And Denise, we have poached your name of the story that you're working on, which is called Designing for the Dump. Denise is part of a group of graduate students working on a series of radio stories that will be broadcast on KGNU. It's called The Brink. So we're going to hear those stories later in the month. But your particular story is very much aligned with this. But it's looking at what happens with the very end of this, where all of this electronic and technological waste ends up. Tell us a little bit about Designing for the Dump, your radio story.
Thanks, Maeve. I just want to get back to what Harlan said. So Harlan spoke about how tough it is actually to, you know, do recycling. And especially in the US, recycling is a very expensive industry, and I think that goes in for a lot of recycling industries globally. But in comparison to how difficult it is to, you know, conduct most of this within the US, a lot of recycling industries just want to transport or dump most of this waste back into developing countries. So in 2015, there was a United Nations Environment Program report called Waste Crimes, which actually tried to figure out what was the total amount of waste which was getting illegally dumped. And I think they came out with almost 90% of that waste being dumped in countries like India and China. And mind you, India and China also have their own e-waste growing market. So this adds in this huge burden, because most of the e-waste happens in the informal sector out there. And by informal sector, we mean some of the most marginalized communities within the country work in the most hazardous conditions. So it's not only an environmental impact, but also a social impact because it has huge health consequences. Mm-hmm. So that's been a real concern in terms of, you know, planned obsolescence, increased consumerism, and this growing e-waste market, which finally lands up in countries which do not have a mechanism to deal with the waste.
So what happens with that? And you said there are so many workers working informally in the sector. What do they do? What are they being exposed to?
So it's, I mean, I can't tell you what type of chemicals because I'm not a chemist in this, but, you know, from what I've actually seen and done, you know, it's lead, it's arsenic, and they rip apart most of these electronics with their hands, which cannot be done. It needs to be done in the most sophisticated manner with some technology in place. And once they do this, they'll burn it. They're inhaling the fumes. They're working in rooms which are unventilated. And it's a huge mess out there.
So what we're doing today, I suppose, is connecting upstream and downstream.
Exactly.
And just to think, if you have a mobile phone that either no longer works or is, you feel, not technologically, you know, adept for your purposes, if you end up throwing that into the waste system, it could potentially end up somewhere like that in India with some of these workers being exposed to it.
Exactly.
Well, one of the things we're talking about today is how to maybe avoid that, or at least, you know, lengthen the utility of some of these electronics that we have. So to that end, the Boulder You Fix It Clinic happens how often, and where and when do these things happen?
It happens regularly every other month at the Boulder Public Library, Building 61, Makerspace. They're wonderful hosts for us there. It's a small space, but it's got great equipment there, and just lovely space. Then we have a few other additional places that we'll do it from time to time. We have one coming up in Lyons next month. But the regular schedule is every other month at Boulder Public Library.
What are the items that people are bringing in?
Well, I want to emphasize it's not just electronics. It's really any. We try to keep it open to anything that you can drag in if you're willing to bring
it
in.
Wow, that's pretty wide.
It is, and it's intimidating a little bit as a coach, I have to say, but. We try to leave it open for anything. That was the challenge of Wayne's friends Peter and Steve with their original Fix It Clinic concept. So we get people bringing in furniture. We get people bringing in sewing projects. We'll want to definitely give some props to our sewing coaches. I think the sewing projects are often a combination of. You know, helping people with their sewing projects and also helping people understand their machines, because I think that's a lot of the problem is that people have with sewing machines is they're fairly complicated, and even just getting them threaded properly is challenging for a lot of people. So you know, their barriers to completing their projects are generally a combination of actually the sewing itself and making the machine work. So we get a lot of sewing projects. We get, anything you can imagine that's in a lying around your house broken, people have brought it in. We get people's family heirloom stuff, complicated chandeliers, all kinds of weird stuff.
Well, to that end, we've got a lamp right here in the studio. And I know this is one of these common household appliances that when they stop working, very few of us would have the wherewithal to think, well, I've tried changing the light bulb. That's not it. I guess it's broken. Time to get a new lamp. But at the Boulder You Fix It Clinic, you could bring such a product along and folks like yourself, Wayne and Dan, could maybe take it apart and do some diagnostics. So talk us through what we have going on here.
So indeed, lamps are a popular item. In fact, the statistics on our clinics is for every hour of every clinic we've ever done, we segment into 1 hour fixing sessions. We've always had at least a lamp. And why do people bring lamps? Often there's some nostalgic attachment to them. This was grandma's lamp, or this lamp looks cool. And why haven't people fixed it? Well, you know, they have scary electrical parts. And rightfully so, people should be concerned about doing a proper repair so they don't catch their house on fire or get shocked or something like that. So we emphasize a safe repair. We really don't want people to do sort of a less than perfect repair with substandard parts or taking shortcuts. So we want to teach people to do this correctly. But as we said earlier, it's about demystifying something. So a lamp looks like maybe this black box that you plug in. If it works, and if it doesn't work, then what to do? It sits in the garage. Some people will bring it to the Center for Hard to Recycle Materials, CHARM, down the street, where Dan is the director on Arapahoe and 63rd. And there it'll go through a process where the materials can be reclaimed to the extent that they can be sorted and all that. You know, copper wire is a great thing to recycle. I don't know where lampshades go. Light bulb, you have to be careful, fluorescent bulbs, things like that. But most lamps can be fixed pretty simply because they're made of commonly available parts, easily understood. You want to go through that now?
Let's do that. And what are some of the steps that you typically go through? If you have a broken lamp, and I, challenge maybe some listeners, if you've got a broken lamp in your house, maybe, get it out now, because we invite you to call in a few minutes. But, what are some of the most common things that tend to go wrong that can be easily fixed?
Our process, and actually this is what Peter and Berkeley taught us, is get the narrative. So we have volunteer coaches who we pair up with our participants who drag their thing in, and we always want them to introduce themselves because this is supposed to be fun and personal. And we ask them three questions. What was this thing like when it worked? What happened when it broke? And what have you done since then? Sometimes, for forcing someone to think through that series of events, they actually will reveal the problem and the solution.
I spilled a cup of coffee on it last Saturday.
Right. Or ever since the lamp started, I noticed the dog was acting funny. And now there are teeth marks on the cord. Maybe they're related, right? Sometimes that reveals. Or, I dropped it. I like the window air conditioner that came in. Well, my tenants accidentally dropped the window air conditioner out the window and it fell two floors dangling by its cord. And this once rectangular thing was now a trapezoid. We actually got it to work. I was surprised. But I'm glad no one was underneath it. But lamps are simple. The diagnostic process, pretty straightforward. Of course, we all know this. Does the bulb work, right? So, this bulb works. Well, it did earlier. So that's a good thing.
Check the bulb.
Check the bulb, right. That's obvious. And that's the part that you think might go out. Although in this case, this is a weird-looking LED bulb with 25,000 hours of life. This probably won't be the problem, right? So certainly plug it in, turn on the switch. Nothing's happening. Is this outlet working? Plug something else into your outlet to see if the outlet's okay. There's all kinds of tools you can use to measure that, but mostly it's just you probably have the diagnostic tools, another lamp, another thing to plug into the outlet. And then you start looking at it. Well, we love to use lamps as an introduction into sort of basic circuits. And we like to show people this handy diagram of proper lamp polarity.
Now, for radio purposes, I'm going to encourage people to check out the Facebook Live video that we're streaming right now at KGNU. Facebook page, and you might be able to see it, but there's basically, I don't know what that is. It's some kind of diagram about a lamp.
You can follow along at home. Go to boulderufixitclinic.org, and on the lower right sort of the page, there's a resources thing, and there's a link for lamp wiring guide or some lamp polarity guide. And it's this nice picture, which I stole from someplace else, but I credited it, see? Nice drawing. So it shows that, we have a lamp plug, electric power cord, and it has two prongs, right? So the two sides of an electrical circuit. If you look into the socket itself, there are also two connections. So a light bulb has two connections, the outer screw part and the center part. Well, if you could manage to get this thing to touch directly the two wires in your outlet, the light lamp would go on, but the function of the fixture, other than having a place to hold it, is to connect those two things together. So this isn't working. First you want to see is, the two sides of these two wires, are they connected? So a simple tool you can buy, which, used to be an expensive, exotic thing only known to engineers and electricians, is a digital multimeter. And they're available for almost free all over the place. This one's a little fancier, but really you don't have to have it. It has a function that looks like maybe millennials will think is a Wi-Fi signal, but it's supposed to be beep. And what it does, hey Dan, would you hold this? It tells you, are wires connected together? So if I have these two test probes, the red and the black, and I connect them, it beeps That's good for radio, right? So that tells us, does this wire work? So, you know, if I hooked it to two pieces of metal that conducts electricity, like a screwdriver, you know, that's going to beep, except not this one. Yeah, there you go. Okay. So one thing we could do, Denise is going to help me here.
Sure.
So I'm going to hook up this side of the this thing to one of the prongs in the plug. And if all is well, that should find its way into one of the parts of the socket. So let's see if that's true. Ah.
We hear a beep, so that's something encouraging.
So that tells us the outside part that the outside part of the lamp connects to is good.
Well, while you're doing that, I just want to let listeners know exactly what is going on here at KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I guess we could call it lamp talk. We're doing live repair of a lamp here. Because it's coming up on Earth Day, and the show today is in partnership with EcoCycle, and it's taking a look at electronic waste, e-waste. And we have in studio Wayne Seltzer with the Boulder You Fix It Clinic. Dan Mache, who's also involved with the clinics. He's the head of the Centre for the Hard to Recycle Materials, and that's part of EcoCycle. Harlan Savage with EcoCycle also in the studio. And Denise Fernandez, who is a graduate student in the Environmental Studies program at CU Boulder. She's working on a radio story that will be broadcast next month on KGNU as part of The Brink, which is a series of stories produced by grad students in the Environmental Studies program. Her project is Designing for the Dump, E-Waste Recycling and Environmental Justice Concerns. I'm Maeve Conran, and today's show is in advance of Earth Day, but also part of this year-long series we're doing with EcoCycle. It consists of weekly tips on zero waste and recycling, some monthly stories, and these quarterly shows. And tomorrow we're going to hear about how recycling education has really been impactful in schools. So that's tomorrow morning. But in the meantime, I can direct people to the KGNU Facebook page where we're doing a live video of this lamp repair that's in action. And this is the kind of thing you can get if you go to one of the You Fix It clinics that happen very regularly here in Boulder County. So continue, Wayne, having said all of that.
All right. So with that sort of pleasant beep sound, we have kind of, in some measure, a half a working lamp. That's pretty good. Doesn't deserve to go in the trash. Or at least half of it doesn't. Denise, if you would switch this connector, the test probe, to the other one, there's a squeezy thing here. Let's connect, test the other half. And now we look in the center contact for the lamp, and nothing happening, no beep. Now, of course, there's a switch, like lots of lamps have. I can turn that, still no beep. So this half of the circuit, not working. I knew that because I broke it on purpose. So now we've got to go to...
Know what's broken.
Yeah, so now we need to go to the next level of decomposition. And a lot of the repair problems are, how do I take it apart? A lot of manufacturers hide the screws, put them under sticky labels. And an example that was not so well received across the universe was when the iPhone 5 came out, they put in the pentalobe screw, requiring a screwdriver that no one in the planet had yet other than Apple. China responded within moments, apparently, and manufactured a lot of them and sold them on eBay for a dollar. So, sorry, Apple, that didn't work. And people want to take apart their iPhones and change their batteries. Thank you. This lamp, we happen to choose a socket that's easy to take apart. So I can just unscrew this top part, revealing some of the electronic mysteries within, and we find the lamp socket. So lamp sockets wear out a lot just because the electrical contact eventually gets dirty. Sometimes this part in the middle, this brass piece, gets corroded, so a pencil eraser or a small piece of sandpaper can clean that up. Sometimes the springy bit that connects to this part of the bulb, it's just become less springy, and you can go in there with a screwdriver, pry it open, and now it'll make contact again. This one's nice and shiny and new. If all else fails, you can just buy this part, and our many hardware stores will be happy to sell you one for a couple of dollars.
And it's just called a lamp socket.
This one says three-way lamp socket, so that's like a party right there in a lamp socket. It's for your medium, dim, bright bulb. But they're easy, they're simple, and they're designed to be replaced. And I think there was a time when most people knew this, but I think we've sort of forgotten or forgot to teach ourselves about it. So it's really straightforward. So if I continue to reveal what's going on here, I'm going to thread some of the wire from the base of the lamp up through the middle. There's a wire hiding out in the middle. No surprise there, right? Had to get there somehow. And now I can pull this out and, oh, here's the problem. Look, this is supposed to be connected. So
there's a wire that has been disconnected from the lamp socket for our listeners. But you can see all of this on our Facebook page right now at KGNU.org.
Let's go check that out again. So So now I can see I get that pleasant beep to the wire, but of course it wasn't going through the socket. So these are pretty straightforward. You know, there's a screw terminal on these lamp sockets. You can unscrew, put that lamp underneath, this wire underneath. You may need to use wire strippers to cut it if it's the wire is broken off. Or
now, all of these tools, if you don't have them, and this electronic machine that tests whether it's functional, these are available at the U-Fix-It clinics, right?
Oh, we have actually acquired a fine set of tools and supplies. We got a grant from Boulder County Zero Waste.
That's right.
We are affiliated with the Oracle Volunteers Program, and which helps us recruit volunteer coaches and also provide us a little bit of a budget to buy stuff to replace our parts. Mm. We have a good collection now. We started out with our coaches just bringing all their own things, and that gets boring, tiring. But now we have a bunch of stuff that occupies the hallway outside of Dan's office, and we fill the back of the EcoCycle pickup truck to bring it to the library wherever we're going.
Because I think that's a barrier for some people, that I don't have the tools. Mm-hmm. Harlan Savage, you wanted to weigh in.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say for people that have never been to a U-Fix-It clinic, just to walk people through what this is about. And just wanted to make the point that a U-Fix-It clinic is about you, Y-O-U. And so when you come in, please don't come with the expectation that you're going to hand off your broken item to Wayne and come back in an hour and it will be fixed. So the whole idea here is empowerment and education, and doing that in an interactive way. So when you sign up, and you do need to sign up, there are time slots. So I believe those are hour-long time slots, or half an hour.
That's correct.
Hour. Yep.
So that you have ample time, and you come at your allotted time, and you are assigned a coach, and you get the big, nice, lovely, wonderful toolbox. And we do ask that if there are any extra parts for what you're trying to fix, or any special parts that you know about, that you please bring them. And then you really do this together as a team, so that you are fixing the thing itself.
And so it's really about empowering people to then take those skills home and then be encouraged to do it. Have you fixed the lamp, Wayne?
I'm not sure, but
let's try.
This
is very exciting.
So I'll plug it in and let's see what happens. There's a switch.
We have light.
All right,
if you're watching on our Facebook page, you can see that we now have a fully functional lamp here.
It's fully functional.
That took all of like 2 minutes. I know it was longer because you were describing what was going on.
Yeah.
But I would imagine that for many people, they wouldn't take those steps to do that, and something like that lamp might end up in the waste stream.
So this particular demonstration we do in sort of more detail, we've actually been gearing towards our youngest participants. We've been to the Denver Maker Fair, and most recently the Rocky Mountain Steam Fest at the Boulder County Fairgrounds. We had a lot of young people come through. I think our youngest was probably 3, up to maybe teenagers, 13. And we asked them questions like, you know, do you have any of these at home? Surprisingly, a lot of people don't recognize this as a lamp. You know, they might think of a desk lamp or ceiling lamp or something else, but they get to it eventually. And they're eager to take it apart. And they love that moment of, ta-da, I fixed something, the light went on. And it's really, really simple. You know, elsewhere at the Make Affairs, people are building, I don't know, time, space, travel machines and robots. That's great. For those people who are into that, fantastic. But this could be your gateway to becoming a maker. Come learn to fix a lamp, learn to fix something more complicated, and be creative and push back on the manufacturing stream to make more repairable, consumer-friendly products. We need the educated consumers to get this right in the long term.
That's Wayne Seltzer of the Boulder U-Fix-It Clinic. He has just successfully repaired a lamp live on KGNU. I think it's the first time we've had that happen. But it's part of a show that we're doing in advance of Earth Day, and part of a year-long program we're doing with EcoCycle, Harlan Savage with EcoCycle, and Dan Mage, who's actually the head of the Centre for Hard to Recycle Materials at EcoCycle, joining us in the studio, along with Denise Fernandez, who's a graduate student in the Environmental Studies program at CU Boulder. She's working on a project designing for the dump, e-waste recycling and environmental justice concerns. Now, we're inviting people to think about what you might have in your house right now that is broken, that maybe could be fixed, and you can give us a call right now at 303-442-4242, or maybe you'd just like to weigh in on this topic of designing for the dump, on corporate responsibility and then consumer responsibility, that as we're hearing, it's maybe not as hard to fix items as we had originally thought. So we're inviting people to watch KGNU. At our Facebook page, we're doing a live video stream. But you can also go to the phones at 303-442-4242. And we do have some calls coming in. We'll go first to the phones and welcome Eve calling in from Longmont. You're live on KGNU. What's your question
Thanks,
or comment?
Hi. I just wanted to say that I hope that this wonderful program is doing substantial outreach to low-income communities, because I think they could, they're probably less aware. I could be wrong about this, but they may not be so aware of this and opportunity, and they could benefit from it a lot.
Good question, Eve. Well, Harlan, what about that?
Oh, I was just thinking of that. Thank you so much for calling and making that point. I think that is really, really important. And it's certainly something that EcoCycle is aware of. And we want to be inclusive of everyone in the community. And so we will make a big effort there. You know, we have been, but the way you phrase that, you know, maybe we need to set up some special clinics. As Dan mentioned before, we do that periodically. And one thing that I think this program really wants to go in the direction of is empowering communities to kind of start their own You Fix It programs. And that's kind of where your comment, Eve, comes in, is that we are trying to expand and grow the program throughout Boulder County and beyond. And that doesn't necessarily mean that these will, you know, Dan and Wayne will be doing every clinic. It means that we will be coming out and working in communities that want to know how to do it themselves and empowering them to do so.
Well, we have full lines this morning. And so much of this knowledge seems to get passed on from older generations. I remember my dad teaching me how to change a plug. That knowledge doesn't work here because we have three-prong plugs in Ireland, but I'll maybe come to a clinic and learn how to change a two-prong plug. But we'll go back to the phones and welcome Jim to the air this morning. You're live on KGNU.
Good morning. I'm calling because I have a question on an electronic device that I've had for a dozen years. It's an under-cabinet radio, which I have tuned to KGNU, and I listen to whenever I'm preparing meals or have a minute, and the display has gone bad on it, so I can't tell what frequency I'm on, so I just leave it on KGNU, but is there...
Well, there's nothing wrong.
That's a good workaround, okay. Jim. I would say that's right. A fully functional radio, but let's get Dan or Wayne to weigh in.
I think you go pick up some masking tape and a Sharpie and you just write KGNU, and you're good.
Right.
You're good. So, you know, a lot of these things are like, I don't know. So, you know, you can consult the Google. Chances are the problem you're experiencing has been experienced by many other people, and some of them have been kind enough to document their troubleshooting and solution. So look for that make and model number in the symptom, and you might find someone actually built a YouTube video that tells you exactly what to do or what part to replace. Or it might have some very sad news for you, that the part that is bad is not replaceable or not obtainable, and no kidding aside, masking tape.
Yeah.
But yeah, some things are like, yeah, go ahead.
Is this something that I could bring into the Fix It and possibly work on it, or is that a lost cause?
No, that's a great project. Just, you know, coming with the mindset that this is an educational learning opportunity may not result in actually repairing it, but it'll be a fun exploration, and maybe there will be a solution. Even though we like to have this sort of neatly designed people come in for their hour with their slot, with their coach, chaos ensues within seconds of these clinics. And if somebody brings in some strange thing and everyone wants to scratch their head and poke at it, that's what's going on. Sometimes it's the participants who claim to know nothing about fixing anything actually come up with the solution. So it's a total crowdsourcing group experience to investigate, explore, and possibly resolve.
Well, Jim, why don't you head along to the next You Fix It clinic? And do let us know how you get on. When are the next clinics and when can people find out more?
So the next one coming up is actually the one I mentioned in Lyons. That is on Saturday, May 12th. It's from 10 to 1 in Sandstone Park. It's going to be outside. That is part of EcoCycle's Green Star Community Project in Lyons. Then the following weekend, Sunday, May 20, we have one 1 to 4. That is at Boulder Public Library, Building 61 Makerspace. And then the one after that is Sunday, July 15th. It happens to be my birthday. That's my birthday fix-it clinic.
So bring a cake if you're going to that.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, I know all of these times are online as well.
Yes. And online, you can find the more information and the sign-up link. That is at ecocycle.org/charm or boulderyoufixitclinic.org. Either one will get you there.
Well, Jim, good luck with that radio. You know, worst case scenario, you have to listen to KGNU in perpetuity.
Right.
But we'll be here.
That's not a problem. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you very
much. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
We have full lines this morning. I wonder, do we have a lot of broken radios and lamps out there or people just wanting to weigh in? We'll go next to Sarah. Sarah, welcome. You're live on KGNU this morning.
Yes. Over the years, I've learned to fix lamps and I try not to mess with electronics, but I just don't use electronics if I can help it. So that means I'm pre-digital. I'd like to ask a question about if you don't know about smartphones for photography, can you enlist someone who has one, you know, that comes to your house, to take a picture of furniture to send to Habitat for Humanity so they know if there's something they can use, because they send a truck then.
I'm not sure anybody has the answer to that. I would suggest maybe reaching out to neighbours and seeing who's got a smartphone and can take a photo. And as we were saying, we're doing a lot of community knowledge sourcing. That might be something to reach out to them. Dan, did you have an answer? No. We're getting blank looks in the studio, I'm afraid.
I would say, you know, grab the first teenager walking by your house looking at a cell phone. You may have to really jump up and down to get their attention, but I bet that they can help you and it would be delighted to help you learn something that you haven't learned since you're pre-digital. You have fingers, right? I mean, that's not digital. I mean, it's hard to use a cell phone otherwise.
Denise Fernandez, as our millennial in the studio, do you have a suggestion?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, if you catch hold of a teenager, most of your smartphones these days have good resolution, so you would get a really good picture. So I would completely agree with Wayne, catch hold of the nearest neighbor, maybe a young teenager out there, and you would get a good picture.
And they'll be teaching about email attachments. It's a little scary, but you'll get through
it. That's okay. This is another community education
I have her email address to whom I have to send it.
Well, that's perfect. That's half the battle. So all you need now is a teenager. Good luck with that,
They're
Sarah.
Available.
Thank you for calling in. We have full lines this morning at KGNU at 303-442-4242. We also have a full studio this morning with our guests from EcoCycle, Harlan Savage and Dan Mage and Wynne Seltzer with the Boulder You Fix It Clinic and Denise Fernandez, who's an environmental studies program graduate student, that's at CU Boulder. She's working on a radio project designing for the dump, e-waste recycling and environmental justice concerns. We're going to hear that entire series because there's a whole lot of graduate students working on radio stories all about environmental justice, and we'll be broadcasting those as part of the Brink series coming up in May. We'll go back to the phones and welcome Rudy. You're live on KGNU this morning. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, good morning. I have a comment. You said earlier in your program that if things would be produced to last, the economy would suffer from that. And I don't agree with that. I bought over 20 years ago from Panasonic some rechargeable batteries, and I'm still using those. They were $8 a piece back then. And if things would be made to last, people would keep them. They could be repaired, and in the first place, you pay a higher price. But in the long run, you don't have costs for landfill or for disposal and all this stuff. And that should be promoted more with warranties and with reviews that people can look at. So if you buy something in the first place, you know it's going to last 15 years, 20 years, and you pay the higher price.
That's a great point, Rudy. And I think that was something that, Wayne, you mentioned earlier, maybe that in addition to all the other reviews that you have on products, you could have a fixability, a longevity review.
Well, I mean, I think with the money you're saving on buying longer lasting, more repairable products, you can buy other stuff or maybe help people who don't have stuff. There's a lot of things. You could fund EcoCycle, for example, because EcoCycle can do amazing things with some more cash. Our long-term view for this project, actually, is to have sort of a in-place, ongoing fix-the-clinic that's not scheduled, but there. And Dan and I have talked about this over far too much caffeine over the last few years. If you go to Charm and you see what people dump in those bins and they're happy to get rid of their broken thing, this is a sad story. Those things, to me, it's sad. It turns into plastic and metal recycling. But sometimes it's a $500 Dyson vacuum cleaner that has a hair ball stuck in it from your cat, or a cappuccino machine that you spent $1,000 for and you forgot that you have to run the decalcification process, otherwise the valves get clogged up. So I'd like to see those turned into usable products. EcoCycle is doing it now with computers through the Blue Star Recycling Program, right? Is that what it's called?
Yep, that's right.
And turning computers and things like that into better waste stream than just metal, right? But I think, and this is something where, you know, my colleagues in fix-it clinics around the world need to get together. Can we actually use the waste stream, recycle the products to make them usable again, or at least harvest the products to do sort of an appliance organ transplant? We've done that sometimes at clinics. That would be a cool thing. We talked about outreach to those less fortunate. Well, to me, if you're going to community food chair because you'd like a loaf of bread for free, you might also need a toaster oven. Mm-hmm. And so that toaster oven is going to the recycling processors, but could easily fix. Let's figure out a way to do that. Make it safely available to people who need them instead of putting them in the ground.
Well, thank you very much for your call, Rudy. And we'll go back and take another call here at 303-442-4242. I knew this hour would go fast. We're covering a lot of ground here and a lot of calls coming in. Harlan, did you want to weigh in there, or Wayne covered
it
admirably?
Oh, I've kind of forgotten what I was going
to I can jump in, actually, because I had a point there. So I think Maeve mentioned that it's largely because of a capitalist economy. So I think what Rudy's answer to, or Rudy's question to that particular thing was, you know, designers or manufacturers are designing for profit. So I think that's the perspective. If you do not design for profit, your economy suffers. But then from a consumer perspective, you know, you're spending more money where you could actually buy in something else which is more valuable. So in terms from a manufacturing perspective, yes, it does affect the economy, which is how the capitalist system is run.
But then again, we as consumers really are the engine of this. And so, as we have been saying, maybe we're the ones who need to be demanding these changes.
Well, I think that may well be true, because I think we have this amazing illusion of choice in this country. And really, I don't think, you know, when I walk into the store and I can't find a product made from recyclable materials or one that can be readily repaired, and maybe I will have a better idea what that means after this, my choice, my preference is not being expressed to me, you know, in the marketplace. And I think that we are letting corporations define our choices for us too much. And part of this is, you know, taking that back and putting the responsibility, I think, where it belongs. And I don't think that the corporate manufacturers have done that.
Well, I want to see if we can squeeze in one final caller. Bruno, you're live on KGNU. What's your question or comment this morning? And if you could turn down your radio.
Good morning. I tried to recycle an old television, and I was referred to Best Buy. They asked $25. I also tried with EcoCycle, and they ask 59 cents a pound, which means that if a television is 40, 50 pounds, it can be even more than $25. Now, I think that this request is too high to stimulate somebody to do his duty as a good citizen. Mm-hmm. And EcoCycle, a cooperative that has public money funding, should not ask so much.
Okay, well, Bruno, let's put that to us. And I know EcoCycle, just to clarify, is a non-profit.
Correct, EcoCycle is a non-profit.
Yeah, but I mean, it should have public money from the state or from the city to help. Because, you know, you have to pay $25, $30, plus you have to bring the television.
Mm-hmm.
It gets to be too much.
Okay, well, Bruno, good points. And let's bring in our EcoCycle representative here, Harlan Savage.
Bruno, first, I'm going to let Dan mostly address this, but I did want to say thank you so much for bringing up this issue. And I mentioned when I was first talking about the legislation that was enacted in Colorado that bans electronics from the landfill, and the fact that the state government is not allocating resources to help people with this, because it is expensive to dispose of potentially hazardous materials. And we would very much like to see something done about that. And I'll just turn it over to Dan, who can address this a little bit more.
Well, Bruno, we do get some funding from the city of Boulder. That's true, and we're very grateful for it. It covers about 12% of our budget. That does not allow us to subsidize the cost of TV recycling, and you know, specifically the old tube TVs, the cathode ray tubes. Yes, they are expensive to recycle. That's because nobody's making cathode ray tubes anymore. So that leaded glass, there's very limited markets for it, and that and basically the markets that exists can name their price. I will say though that we're very proud of our electronics recycling program, because we are partnered with, as Wayne mentioned, Blue Star Recyclers, which is a program that started in Colorado Springs. They're also in Denver, and in the last year and a half almost. They have been our in-house recycling processor. They employ people with disabilities, so it's employing hard to employ people to process hard to recycle materials. So we think it's a beautiful match, and I think it's worth supporting. And it is not. We're both social enterprises. We are not funded largely by public money. We are social enterprise means we operate as a for-profit would, except that we're plowing our profits back into our operations. So we run as lean as we can, but proper recycling of those items is expensive, and as Denise is here to witness that, there's an export problem there as well. So we want to get it recycled domestically, and that's more expensive.
Well, I'm afraid we're out of time, Bruno. Hopefully that answered some of your questions, but really it does underline that there's a cost to all of this waste, electronic and technology waste, environmental, a cost to the consumer here, and a cost to the health of folks who ultimately end up possibly recycling it in or dealing with the waste if it gets exported to another country. But we are out of time, and it's been a really fun hour, and I'm so excited we fixed a lamp. We're live on the radio. I'm looking at it now, shining so brightly. A big thank you to all our guests today. We've had Harlan Savage from EcoCycle, Dan Mage, who's with the Centre for Hard to Recycle Material at EcoCycle, and we also have Wayne Seltzer in studio with the Boulder You Fix It Clinic, and Denise Fernandez, an environmental studies program grad student at CU Boulder. Stay tuned for her radio story, Designing for the Dump, E-Waste Recycling and Environmental Justice Concerns. It's part of this series that we're going to be broadcasting later in May, part of The Brink. It's a series of environmental justice radio programs. Thank you all for coming in. We've done our first Facebook Live TV show of this as well, and that video will be available as well if you want to see this lovely lamp that we fixed live on the radio. And just to let people know, this is part of a year-long series that KGNU is doing in conjunction with EcoCycle on Zero Waste. You can tune in on Friday mornings during the Morning Magazine for coverage and tips on zero waste issues. All of that's available at news.kgnu.org. Click on Zero Waste, and it's made possible thanks to a grant from Boulder County. And tomorrow morning, we're going to hear a story on the efforts to educate children on recycling and how really that's been so effective. In the meantime, I would like to thank all of our guests this morning.
Thank you, Maeve.
I'm Maeve Conran with KGNU. Stay tuned for the Morning Sound Alternative.